Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 5, Episode 14 of Cinematica, and we're just changing it up a little bit because it's American Hustle Day here at Cinematica Towers. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the studio is...
Hey, it's me back from the holds.
And yeah, Simon.
I didn't even know you were going to play that, and all of a sudden it was like we all spontaneously started jiving.
It was great.
Well done, Dan. Well done.
I'm awake now.
Yeah.
Still dancing, getting work. The blood flowing.
Now, Simon, I just want to ask you, how were your holidays? Because you don't seem to be terribly well tanned.
You've seen me. People haven't out there in Radioland haven't seen me, but I'm pinkish.
You're a little bit more tanned.
I'm a little bit more tanned, but I don't go brown.
Oh, okay. Is that it?
When you come from an aristocratic sort of background, you're not used to being in the fields, and you don't get this tan thing going on. You're up in the castle, mate. You know, like not in the fields. No, I just go. I love being in the sun, but I just go pink and burn.
Mm. Mm, right. Me too.
And I'm not even. You know, I'm dark haired.
It's true. You are
not a ginger.
Well, you were
flowing locks.
Yeah, that's right.
Black.
Had
Disney
a lovely time
hair.
Though. Had a lovely time.
Also here with us in the studio, Kaylee.
Yes, hello.
How you doing?
Good, it's a bit warm.
It's
nice to have everyone else together though.
Yeah, it is,
yeah.
Isn't it?
And
this is a momentous occasion.
Because we have audio this week.
Yeah, we do. Yes. We'll talk a little bit about the momentousness of it a little bit later on in the show. But let's talk about what we do have in today's episode. We are going to do The Hustle with David O. Russell and his cast of... What?
That was amazing.
Rock and roller, Ayatollah.
And his cast of oddly dressed luminaries in American Hustle. We take a trip to Burma with the railway man, and we're going to ask the question whether it is in fact true that there's no fool like an old fool in Last Vegas. All that and more in this week's episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast. Before we get into that, though, what is in the mailbag, Kaylee?
Well, exciting news after our little report on Justin Bieber last week. He was arrested for a DUI, so
we yay. Were so ahead of that game.
So ahead of it. So thank you everyone for tweeting us that information.
Yeah, I think it was like 10% of New Zealand 10% of New Zealand's internet traffic on that particular day was people telling us about Justin Bieber.
Pretty much.
He doesn't look like he should be drinking.
He's or driving.
Young. Or driving. Yeah. He's too young, isn't he? How old is he? Is he old enough to drink?
He's 19.
Yeah.
He is in fact 19. If you'd have listened to the last week's show, we went through this in some detail.
Did you? Well
yes.
done.
Yeah. Quite embarrassing, actually.
How much or how little we in fact know about the Biebs. But, of course, you know, he was not just drunk on any old Commoner Garden alcohol. It was basically cough syrup. It was that special mixture of cough syrup and prescription drugs that the rappers like. So he's been hanging around with the hip hop community a little bit too
also
much.
Also, kids at summer camp like.
So he's
getting drunk on mouthwash and cough syrup.
He's getting quite gangster, isn't he? I mean, this is a new world to me. I didn't know you could do that.
Mix cough syrup and prescription painkillers. Yep.
Yeah. Well, the prescription painkillers I've always, you know, but it was usually vodka or something, but not. Yeah, it's always so thick and treacly kind of.
It's very sweet as well. So, you know, there's a reason why. If you haven't got a taste for grown-up alcohol, then
no.
The sweetness
yeah,
of it.
Sure.
But he's the legal drinking age in Canada, but not in the United States. And because he lives in the United States, he can't really drink alcohol.
This is the only way. Because it's not actually illegal to mix prescription drugs and cough syrup.
No, you just
nightmares.
Get judged harshly by other people.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough about the Biebs this time around, because the next time we talk about him, it'll be his...
When he goes down for time.
Yeah. That'll be
well, maybe we should stop talking about him altogether.
Maybe we should.
Anyway, so RJ Movies tweeted their two-word review for Grudge Match, Aging Bull. Nice.
Oh, so somebody's seen it? Have there been previews? Because it doesn't open for a wee while, does it, Grudge Match? Although the trailer has been stinking up the joint.
Yeah, RJ Movies. I want to say they're from... I want to say something about it, but Twitter is not working. So whatever, Twitter.
Okay.
suck.
We got a huge flood of two-word reviews from the lovely Fred Thompson, who we've yet to meet.
The intense Fred Thompson, whose ability to watch films on a weekend rivals only me.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys meet up quite a bit?
No. And Fred Thompson would appear to be some kind of pseudonym.
So let's start. Yeah. Two-word review: Last Vegas. Grey power, formulaic, but the amazing cast made for a charming bromantic comedy. Two-word review for The Railway Man: bland and unconvincing. A movie desperately looking to pull your heartstrings but failing terribly. Although I think I was in the minority as my elderly audience applauded at the end.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There's a two-parter tweet for that one. Not bad at all. And two-word review for Saving Mr. Banks, which had sneaks this past weekend. Simply delightful. Felt sugar-coated, but I guess it went down a little easier. There you go.
Nice.
Good stuff. All right. Well, with previews and what have you happening, maybe the New Zealand movie audience was spread out amongst a number of different films. Can you reveal the top five countdown?
Yes.
What have you been watching, New Zealand?
In at number five, down from four, is Philomena, after 5 weeks at the box office. Down to four from two, The Book Thief, opening at number three, Last Vegas. Number two, finally out of the number one position, Frozen, although it did have a little battle to get there. And opening in the number one position this week is American Hustle. And I'll also note that opening in sixth place was The Railway Man. So there you go.
So American Hustle straight in at number one, which I think, considering that you would expect nothing less, really, considering the marketing campaign.
Yeah, it's had the momentum, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. And we'll talk about it a little bit later on, because I think there's some interesting comparisons to be made with American Hustle and other films that have been released this summer. But before we get into that, it's time to take a trip to Nevada.
Hey, it's Billy.
Billy!
How you doing? What's going on? I got something important here, all right? I'm getting married.
What? Wow. To that young lady who's half your age?
Hey, wait a minute. She's almost 32.
I have a hemorrhoid that's almost 32.
So we're going to have a bachelor party in Vegas.
I can't smoke, drink, eat salt, or stay out past nine, but...
All right, I love it. Come on!
What the hell are you doing here?
Billy is tying the knot in Vegas.
If you think I'm going to Vegas, I'm
not selfish, bastard.
You're dumber than that hat.
Last Vegas, this is, I think, probably the easiest way to describe it is like the hangover for the senior citizens set. And I'm going to just cast my eye around the room here and see whether anybody's going to help me out with this review.
Sorry,
mate, been on holiday.
That's no excuse. Isn't it a holiday when you've got all that free time?
Do you know, if it had rained a bit more, we might have checked it out. The kids want to see it.
Really?
Yeah, they do. Well, my eldest daughter does. So, yeah, she's all excited about it.
Yeah, thinking, I'd advise against that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I want to see it beforehand.
So here we've got Last Vegas, and the idea is that these four great mates who grew up in Brooklyn in the late 1950s, and they bonded, and they're this gang of mates, and even though they've gone to their separate ways, and one of them lives in Florida and one of them lives in LA, they all still are in touch with each other. And the most on the surface successful of them, played by Michael Douglas, he appears to be something big in the movie business in LA, and he's decided that he's for the first time in his life he's going to get married to this young woman. And he gets on the phone to his mates wherever they may be and says, look, time for the bachelor party that I have never had. And so Kevin Kline, who lives in Florida, and Robert De Niro, who still lives in Brooklyn, and Morgan Freeman, who is living with his son and grandchild, and has recently had a stroke, his character, and so his son is very conscious of not straining himself. He's not allowed to pick up the baby or any of that sort of stuff. Anyway, so he's desperate to break out and have a bit of a party. So the only one who doesn't really want to go is Robert De Niro, for reasons that the film will go into, but they persuade him. They get to Las Vegas, and then they meet Mary Steenburgen, who's a lounge singer, or roughly their age, and hijinks ensue, including winning a lot of money at the blackjack table and getting comped into a giant suite at the top story of the hotel. So it does get a bit hangovery.
Mm.
And then they have this party. But of course, you know, it's all about the relationships and various things. Chickens coming home to roost in terms of what they may have done or not done to each other, and you know, maybe let each other down a little bit. And so there's a kind of in amongst the very broad humour, there's some kind of fairly saccharine sentimentality going on there as well. So you're going to ask me whether it's any good now, aren't you?
Well, I was going to say, because, you know, some of the pictures that I've had put on this film are that, you know, it's kind of like the bucket list, that it's in that sort of league and category, and that's why we kind of, you know, had a sniff at it.
There are a lot of jokes about being old.
But is it in that, is it comparable and is it sort of in the same league?
Because I'm trying to remember the bucket list now.
Yeah, I've got a funny feeling it's not.
No, it's not. Actually, the bucket list was a stronger concept, and I think had less really lame humour. If you were, say, I don't know, your daughter's age and you were watching Last Vegas, you would think that all old men hate women. That basically, that, you know, because it's all male chauvinist pigs, basically, unreconstructed chauvinist pigs, and no lessons appear to be learned about all of this. So, you know, on that side, it's kind of old-fashioned and not very pleasant, some of that stuff. And lots of jokes about, you know, prostates and bathrooms and drinking lots of water. And, you know, and it is sort of relentless. The one, I think, redeeming feature about it is that it's a rare occasion to see De Niro playing low status and not and so, you know, he's definitely the poor one in the relationship, you know, around the really strong characters, and it was really nice to see him just for a change play low status. But I'm really clutching at straws to try and find things that are really sort of memorable or, you know, interesting about it. It's so frustrating. Do you remember a film called Wild Hogs?
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. Was it Travolta going out on Harley Davidson's?
Tim the Tall Man was in there too, mm-hmm. wasn't he?
Yeah. Very right. similar to that, unfortunately, and similarly lame.
Okay. Well, so there'll be a sequel then.
Well, yeah. Eventually. So two words for Last Vegas would have to be Old Fools. And that brings us to a slightly more exotic location.
Well, I'd never been to the Highlands before.
It's very romantic. You're romantic?
He's a wonderful man. I've seen it. But he's a mess. I want to know what happened to Eric. I don't believe in this code of silence that you have.
War leaves a mark. When we surrendered, the Japs said we weren't men. Real men would die of shame.
The Railway Man. Simon?
We were at the same screening, weren't we?
We were. I think we were. And it was a wee while ago now. How was that held up in your memory?
It's got some strength to it. It's interesting talking to customers once it's in season, and you know, and maybe your perspective is a bit different once you've had a few chats. And it certainly seems to be a film that you know, an older market sort of gravitate towards, who can be, you know, have a closer sort of connection to that time and what took place. But it's probably something that we've seen before. And that, you know, a young officer, or no, I'm not sure if he's an officer, but a young soldier who's caught up in the Second World War in Burma and taken prisoner by the Japanese. I think they're at Singapore when Singapore falls, and of course his passion at the time is the railways and so on, and he gets involved in the building of the Burma Railway, and it's brutal and it's harsh and played really, really well, I thought, by young Jeremy Irvine, who you know, pulls off that role really well, and in some ways I think some of the more interesting parts of the film are when he's in play,
and he does, I think, an outstanding impersonation of a young Colin Firth. Mm-hmm. And you watch him and you think, I didn't realize that Colin Firth had so many noticeable
all those mannerisms.
Jeremy, he nails it. And I had to look him up afterwards. I said, "Well, where have I seen you from?" And of course, he was in War Horse.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Yeah. And so he plays it really well. And of course, Colin Firth, who plays him later on, plays him at a later age, and he meets Nicole Kidman on the railway in England, and works out ways to sort of reconnect with her using the rail and so on. And it has a real charm to it. But he is a very sort of shy and sort of tormented type of person, and as their relationship grows, that becomes quite clear to her that there's a lot of demons and things that he needs to face. And I thought Nicole Kidman, that's the best role I've seen her in for quite a while.
Yeah,
it was something meaty that she could get into, and I thought I really enjoyed watching her in that. And yeah. I was a bit sort of like, oh.
In a thankless kind of role, really. Mm. Like, it could easily have been cast by as somebody not famous. It could have been. She didn't have to be a movie star because the scale of the part isn't actually that big.
But it's funny, like with this, because I saw that film and I was kind of. The thing I got at was a bit of anger and so on, and also like whereas you talk to some of the customers who are a lot older and have a closer connection in a way, and the thing that they seem to take out of it is reconciliation, and so it's it's interesting how I think generational sort of how different generations view these things, I got it that it was in a way it's about reconciliation and forgiveness.
How much did you know about the story before you went in?
I didn't know too much,
man. I didn't actually know very much at all, and certainly didn't know that it was a true story.
Yeah, I mean the memoirs, they're based on the memoirs of
Eric Lomax,
but these stories, I guess the thing for me is, I was instantly sort of thinking of about three or four, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, or whatever, like about three or four sort of films that have a similar theme in a way.
Well,
and it did feel a bit.
I was very Bridge on the River Kwai, because it's the same railway, it felt to me, having watched Bridge on the River Kwai a couple of years ago, it felt a little bit underdone in terms of budget.
Yeah,
compared to David Lean's hundreds and hundreds of extras and what have you, it seemed like there weren't too many bodies on the ground and of course it's Queensland, isn't it, where they go to shoot this stuff nowadays?
Yeah, and it has that look to
or
it.
Northern Territory, maybe. Yeah,
but you can kind of pick it. It's not the real deal, and it kind of comes through a bit. And I think it does have a little slightly kind of TV type production look to it, and only in little parts, but they do sort of pop out there. But everyone is great. I think everyone really, the acting is really strong. And it is, like I say, it was really pleasing to see Nicole come in that sort of role. I thought she nailed it and was great. Colin Firth is his usual sort of, reliable self.
He actually pushes it a little bit, I think, in this. Like, we're used to very restrained Colin Firth. And this is the first time I've seen him really lose it as a character.
And
like,
have
really?
Grey hair.
Mm. Oh, grey hair too. Mm. Yeah. But definitely there was a lot of broken down emotion in him. Usually plays characters that bottle everything up.
Yes.
And so that was quite uncomfortable, actually. It's like seeing a family member lose it.
It was one. It's like,
well, when he goes through, when he cracks and breaks, he has a breakdown essentially, doesn't he? Really?
Yeah.
It's very powerful. And she's, it was funny, like, because, and the only thing that sort of crossed my mind is, surely she would have had a few warnings beforehand. Like, it did seem to be a big surprise out of the blue, but, that's being a nitpicker.
Mm. They seem to have quite a whirlwind romance, though. It seemed to progress really quickly, and maybe that was why. But
yep.
I really enjoyed this film because the evening beforehand, I'd gone to watch American Hustle, which we'll review after the news. So Railway Man, which is much quieter and much more reserved and isn't afraid of those, like, shots of Colin Firth just looking into the distance, was such a breath of fresh air and such a relief after American Hustle that I think it may have skewed my viewing. But I really enjoyed it because it did have those long, quiet, contemplative moments. But it was very affecting and quite dark in some places. But, nothing that's scary enough to give you nightmares, just like a sort of a picture of what was happening at the time. Shame on me. I've not watched Bridge Over the River Kwai yet, but I will. So this is my first experience with a story about this section of the war. So I really enjoyed it. The actor who played young Colin Firth was wonderful.
But it's interesting though, they're all broken, aren't they? Like, other than Nicole Kidman, all the people that are in the film are kind of damaged good. They're broken.
Yeah.
And even in war, if they survive the war, the impact of it just goes on for the rest of their lives. It's never going to go away, and they're going to carry this burden.
Even the point I think that the film wants to make is that even the perpetrators are damaged by it, and that's the sort of lesson that gets learned. It took a long while for me for this film to grab me. I felt kind of disconnected to it. It was only at the time that the Japanese character Nagase arrives in it and the first confrontation between him and Colin Firth's character, that was really the moment that I started paying real attention to it. But it's quite a long way into the film for that, so it probably is worth persevering with, because it doesn't seem to, if you don't know the story, and if you don't know, you haven't read the press releases, then it takes a while for you to work out that it is actually going somewhere.
Yeah.
So, are we going to try and sum this up with two words, do you think?
It's a hard one, but I'm going to go with old, you know, it's just a great history lesson, a reminder.
My two-word review for Railway Man is quiet power.
Okay, and my two would be necessary reconciliation.
Nice.
If that's not a spoiler.
Don't say spoiler, yeah. Then it isn't.
No. Oh, right. Okay. Just I'll cut that bit out later. Okay. It's time for.
Okay. Does everyone have a pen and paper? Because we have the date for the next Screen Actors Guild Award. The date is set for January 25th, 2015. So write that down.
Yeah, because so you can just
SAG Awards.
Yeah, you can just imagine that the campaign for the 2015 Oscars is basically starting now.
Yeah.
Even though we haven't had the 2014 ones yet.
No, start making your guesses.
I wonder if there'll be some pot shots at what hasn't been selected for the Oscars. You know, it'll be interesting to see.
Came up like a few hours after the Oscars were announced. People saying that.
Llewyn Davis was one, and Redford and All Is Lost was another
Captain
one.
Captain Phillips missed out on some of those as well.
Yeah, so I think, but I'm still in this position, as I'm sure some of you are too, in that a lot of the films that have been nominated I haven't seen yet. So it's hard, you know, it's really hard to question, you know, you think, oh, so-and-so should have made it and something else definitely should be there, but you don't know what kicked them out. So, you know, I still haven't seen 12 Years a Slave, for example, which, you know, may totally justify, you know, all of the nods that it's got. So, you know, it's still we're still working our way through the system, aren't we?
I think my favorite Best Picture nominee so far is still Nebraska. Still holding in there. So good.
How close is Gravity? For best film. Or best director, I guess. It's going to get one.
Well, this is the thing, is that I have a feeling that Gravity will romp home with best director because of the vision behind it and the fact that we've never seen anything like that before. But I think perhaps the flaws in the story might hold it back from best picture. That's all.
Yep.
But in terms of Cuarón as a visionary, you'd have to give him a really good shout at best director.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, unless of course, like you say, 12 years is just...
It's just going to,
I have a feeling 12 years is going to be real good. I've heard rumor that it feels a bit long and slow in some places, but I think it'll be good. Yeah. We'll have to see.
Cool.
Sundance came and went last week with a smattering of critically as well as audience acclaimed films among the 160-odd titles screening during the week. We mentioned Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement's What We Do in the Shadows last week, but the awards on Sunday honored Damien Chazelle's Whiplash as Best Dramatic Feature.
I'm really looking forward to this. This was like the opening night film at Sundance, and everybody who saw it was just so into it. It's about a high school jazz drummer, and his teacher who drives him. So it's kind of got sports, music, coming of age, and
drumming,
and yeah, apparently it is like super, super good.
Ooh. Also, Tracy Chapman, remember her, presented the Grand Jury Prize for documentary to Rich Hill. The World Cinema Grand Jury Prize went to the Chilean film To Kill a Man, about a son attempting to avenge the mugging of his father. You mugged my father. Prepare to die.
So I would imagine that some of that Sundance heat will emerge at festival time here. Although, I think often the stuff that comes out at festival time is generally Cannes related rather than Sundance. So you know, and actually in past years we've been excited about things we've read about at Sundance, and you know, then they've shown up and they haven't been all that flash, have they? Mm. So wait and see.
Mm-hmm. The excitement at Sundance might just be physically getting inside out of the cold to watch something.
Yeah, like, true.
Amazing. That was an amazing experience in heated environment. Just kidding, Sundance. In other words, while Lorde was stealing all the headlines, the Grammys also gave it awards for soundtracks. Sound City, Reel to Reel, Dave Grohl's documentary about a recording studio, won Best Compilation, and Adele's Skyfall, which is probably now in your head that I've said it, won Best Soundtrack Song.
Isn't that amazing? Like, seriously, somebody only has to say the word Skyfall, and it's the rest of the day. That's
yeah.
gone.
It's there. She's doing the next one too, isn't she?
Is she?
I hope so.
That would be very smart.
Would be.
Just keep her on it. Just keep her on contract forever.
All right. Time to do some hustling.
I believe that you should treat people the way that you want to be treated. Didn't Jesus say that or something?
Amen.
I think also always take a favor over money. I think Jesus said that as well.
But I don't know if he said the second one, but he might have said the first one.
He's going to say. We have to talk business. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Dolly, can me and the mayor talk about business here?
I'd like to thank the distributors for putting some clips up online of American Hustle so that we could actually have a little bit of an actual scene from the film rather than trying to cobble something together from the trailer. So, thanks very much to everybody.
And if you haven't seen the film yet, that's a great little scene where Jennifer Lawrence is so intoxicated she falls out of the booth.
Yep.
Lovely moment.
Yes.
Right.
So, Kaylee, you are our 70s
expert.
70s disco and fashion expert.
You take your roller skates off now.
Yep. So, David O. Russell's American Hustle. I haven't said it together until now. That sounds great. So, he is the... did he write this one as well?
Co-wrote, I think.
Co-wrote it, yep. Right. Co-written, directed, with, of course, all those A-list actors you have seen on the posters and in the trailers. We have Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper, Christian Bale, Amy Adams, and comedian Louis C.K., who has a small but very important part, quite funny as well. So it's all about Christian Bale's character, Irving Rosenfeld. It's somewhat based on a true story that happened in the U.S., and his partner, Amy Adams. And they get roped in to work for FBI agent Richie, who's played by Bradley Cooper, who pushes them into the world of mafia and Jersey power brokers. Jeremy Renner plays a volatile New Jersey political operator who's caught between the con artists and the feds, while Christian Bale's unpredictable wife, Rosalind, played by Jennifer Lawrence, could be the one thing that brings the whole thing crashing down. And I'm totally just reading a synopsis because I'm terrible at making these things up.
Well, I think it needs a little bit of a read of the synopsis because it's complicated.
It is. There's a lot of hustling going on, and there's all these A-list actors, and there are all these very important characters who get woven together in different ways. It is nominated for Best Picture, and a lot of people were surprised that Christian Bale was nominated as Best Actor in a leading role for this. If you watch the first 2 minutes of him just doing his comb over, I think that's how he got the nomination.
Right.
Like, that's just brilliant.
I think everybody was asleep after that. So
yeah, and him putting on so much weight. People seem to get awards for getting fat.
For getting fat, yeah.
Fat or really thin, you know.
Yeah.
Passion.
Yeah.
So it's a comedy, right?
It is a comedy drama.
But more comedy than drama because everything seems to be dialed up to an extra level of intensity. So, you know, the clothes, you watch a real 1970s movie and they're not wearing clothes that are as wacky as these guys are, right? So, you know, you only have to sort of go back or you look at something on YouTube of like New York in the 70s and you'll think, you know, they look like ordinary people, whereas nobody in this film appears to be any kind of an ordinary person. Like, it's a cartoon.
It's like he took the costumes from like Groove Train, whatever that show was, where people would go on television and dance to disco music. It's like he's like, yep, that's what people wore at the time. That's what my characters are.
Yeah. and the hair and all
Jeremy Renner's hair should, and Amy Adams' side boob should also be getting nominations somewhere.
But what about
there's a lot of it.
Bradley Cooper's tight curls.
Oh, I mean, they're Bradley amazing. Cooper's perm.
That's like, I don't know. That mesmerizes me.
Yeah,
when I see the images of that.
And that's what I found with this film is like it's a little bit camp. You've got these like crazy costumes and this fabulous hair. But outside of that, I wasn't really won over by it.
It felt to me like there was a lot of improv in it. It seemed kind of unstructured, or like individual scenes didn't have enough of a sort of punch or drive to get to the next scene. You know, like sometimes you'd get a little bit of voiceover, and then the scene would just repeat to you what you'd just been told in the voiceover, and and so I wonder how much of it was. Look, I'll tell you what my judgment about this film. This is the one thing that I reckon about this film. It looks like it was a lot more fun to make than it is to watch.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, they're all mates. They all love working with David O. Russell. They've all had a fantastic run of, like, success with him. They all want to get together. They're playing dress-ups, frankly, and they're having a fantastic time. But I just don't know if the script was quite finished, you know. Mm. And there was maybe it was just like, have another go, make it up, you know, or spin it out. And the biggest surprise in terms of that is Jennifer Lawrence, who steals every single scene she's in. I don't even know if she's particularly well cast. She's too young.
Yeah, she's way too young for the role.
But she's brilliant. And in fact, I actually think that most of them are probably not cast all that well. Jeremy Renner's too young to be playing the mayor of whatever it is in New Jersey. You know, like there's Christian Bale probably is miscast as well, but they're all so good that they just go, you know what, this character is so good, I'm going to grab hold of this, I'm going to eat this thing alive.
Yeah, and it's an actress film, not an audience film.
Yeah.
I really like David O. Russell's films. I just find them really entertaining. I really liked Silver Linings Playbook, and The Fighter was fantastic. This one I just found was just so much talking. And I don't know if that's because of the way his co-writers work, or because they just felt like, because it's based on a true story, there had to be a lot of talking to explain all the things that were going on for people who weren't familiar with this.
Or he was just so in love with his actors he couldn't cut away.
Yeah, and it's just like, blah, 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 so blah, blah.
I'd like to compare it to Wolf of Wall Street, right? Wolf of Wall Street covers similar sort of territory in that it's about kind of unlikable characters doing dodgy things in order to try and get rich quick. And so there's a similar sort of theme going on there about you know, American dodginess, basically. And then you watch Wolf of Wall Street, and the editing is so tight and so punchy, and so it's, you know, percussive and energetic. And, you know, 3 hours of Wolf of Wall Street played like 2 hours, and 2 hours and 20 of American Hustle played like 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really wish that there'd been more discipline in it, because I think that there's some great moments, there's some great scenes in it, the actors are having a ball, but it just seemed to, as if everybody was just a little bit too in love with themselves.
No, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, mate. This whole, I mean, enlighten me about Ab Scam, because that's what it's based around, isn't it? It's the old, yeah, like,
yeah. So
does it actually paint the picture? And
it tries to explain.
It tries
what was
to
going
by
on.
Literally the actors just talking about it all the time. I think it felt so long because the actors are talking, but you have to pay attention to sort of figure out what they're talking about and piece things together.
But Ab Scam is an international scam, isn't it?
It was sort of. And what really happened was that a couple of low-life, small-time hustlers get given a way out of jail if they will do a con on behalf of the government to try and get somebody bigger, get a big politician. And it involves that somebody has to pretend to be an Arab sheikh. You know, billionaire who is going to invest in Atlantic City to rebuild, you know, because Atlantic City in the 70s had only just got their casino license back. So they were going to rebuild the casinos, employ everybody. It was going to be fantastic, which is why Jeremy Renner's character, the mayor, is involved. And that, you know, it's kind of sad that he's the only good guy in the whole thing, or except, you know, he's only corrupt for good reasons because he wants to get jobs for people. But it just keeps escalating, and the more they realize that they could get other politicians on the hook, the FBI just goes bananas, basically, and keeps pushing it and pushing it till they actually risk the lives of everybody involved, because the mob gets involved. De Niro turns up.
Yeah.
And talking about De Niro earlier on, playing low status, well, this was De Niro playing
his usual self.
Well, sort of. But actually, you know, he's sort of playing that I'm trying to remember the name of the character, but Godfather Part 2, the old guy in Miami who's basically pulling all the strings, right? He sort of turns up and he's like him, you know, and it's like, wow, you are all the power in the room, and they all realize that they're like one slip of the tongue away from all being, you know, in concrete at the bottom of the Jersey River. And, you know, that's a great moment. But yeah, there's just there's too much sort of flab in between those great moments, I think. It's and unfortunate.
But it looked great.
Yeah, it did. And you know, I can see it being a crowd pleaser up to a point, but I do feel that it just could have been that much better.
Yeah, and I think it's also a great example of how the Oscars rush and the Oscars push works to get these films to be nominated for all these awards.
It's the machine behind it,
isn't it? It's the machine behind it, because I didn't find the film was actually strong enough, really, to be up with Gravity. And
I've certainly read some stuff out there about how, you know, if you're going to choose between Wolf or this, you go to Wolf.
This got all of the marketing push and you know, the studio behind it, and that you know, there's Wolf of Wall Street, even with Leonardo DiCaprio, didn't get the back of a bus, you know, in terms of the advertising. You just didn't see it to that same degree. And actually, Graham Tuckett, former guest on this program, pointed out to me that there are two posters up around cinemas, for one for Wolf of Wall Street and I can't remember the other one, that have spelling mistakes in it. Wolf of Wall Street, the poster, check it out, because it spells Scorsese wrong twice. And this is Roadshow, right? This is actually the local distributor who've done this. And you know, so that's a sign of, you know, well, we're not going to pay that much attention to all of this, and it's a shame, because Wolf of Wall Street is a much, much better film. We should go around the table. Well, not you, Simon, because you're out and you've just put a Jeffer in your mouth.
I'm going to talk like the Don soon.
So we should try and do two words for American Hustle.
My two words for American Hustle are hair and flair.
That's good. Yeah, I'm trying to work out something along the lines of flabby and flabby and hairy.
Just describe Christian Bale.
I know.
Flabby and hairy,
that's right. So that is our verdict on American Hustle. Right, that is our show for this week. Another nice, neat and tidy one. Well, Si, you've got a little announcement to make?
Well, just that, you know, Kaylee, this is going to be... You're moving on from us, which is very sad to see. I know. And we will be having, of course, you know, we'll be celebrating your time here later tonight.
Yeah. With bingo.
With bingo.
Well, you guys will. I'm not invited to that.
Jeez.
Are you going to the opening of the French Film Festival tonight?
I am. Tonight? Yes, exactly. Well, it's not so much the opening as the media launch.
The media
launch for the French Film Festival tonight. So I shall be representing Cinematica there. Look, I just wanted to say... thanks very much for everything that you've done for the show. You've been here since the very beginning, and you know, the way the show has evolved owes a great deal to your contribution. So
it's a fun gig, and it has been a pleasure.
I know, it's really sad.
All right. As for next week, not quite sure what's going to be happening next week. We might be taking a little bit of a break, because I've got some employment issues that I have to resolve.
Yeah, we'll take a breather and then we'll come back at it.
Keep an eye out, and actually, if you want to make sure that you do get the next Cinematica when it is ready, going to iTunes and subscribing is the way that you don't need that way you don't need to wait to be reminded by any of us. It'll just show up miraculously when it is ready. So that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. If you've enjoyed the episode, I've just told you all about subscribing in iTunes or your favorite podcasting software. If you want to get in touch with us to tell us your two-word reviews or to say thank you to Kaylee for all of her work, how might people go about doing that?
Well, you can find us on Twitter via our Twitter handle at CinematicaCast, all one word, no spaces or dashes or anything, on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Cinematica Podcasts, on Letterboxd as Cinematica, where you can read our two-word reviews, and, of course, on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And I know some people have found it on YouTube as well. And occasionally, you know, like when we took a little bit of a break over Christmas, people would just go to YouTube and listen to the theme music just to sort of keep things going for a while. I do know somebody who did that. But we're going to leave you...
Eat some Christmas cake and, like, cry.
We're going to leave you with a little bit more music. This is from... the very excellent soundtrack of American Hustle, full of great 70s hits. This is the strangely alluring Arabic version of Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit by Maissa Karrar, and that means that it's good night from me.
And me.
And thank you everyone for listening, and yeah, see you around.
أكلت الفطرة حتى